Don't strain this year, okay?
Good luck.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. You know what? You should be resident hosts for this. Yeah. Next time.
It's the start of a new era.
It really is.
We should talk a little bit about our interaction with Melrose Place in case there are people who are starting here who never cared about 90210, because we did mention this a bit when we announced that we were going to be doing this to 90210's podcasts ago. But talk a little bit about your history with the Melrose Place.
I watched from the beginning and watched through, I think Lisa Rinna showed up and I was like, and I'm done.
Right.
So not quite all the way through, but pretty close. I definitely have seen the first season, and it was absolutely a ritual in college when it started. And then after college, our esteemed colleague and occasional guest, John Ramos, and various other friends and I went to this bar called the Black Fin to watch it. Once the Black Fin realized that we were doing that, they started bringing out the snacks like it was a football game, like football day. And they'd like, at one point we got like promotional t-shirts from like Kahlua.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, it turned into a whole thing. And then there's like, I mean, it was on East 52nd Street or something. And there were like businessmen in the bar who like got sucked into the show because we were super into it. And we would explain all about what was going on at wig snatching and so on. But yeah, but I never watched it again.
Right.
Like it was not something that you went back to or sort of remembered fondly. Very not ephemeral, because whatever, it's Melrose Place. But yeah, I'm fairly well versed, but we will get to a point where I'm just like, who? Like, Sydney's married to what now?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, it's really interesting, especially since in the 90210-iverse, we are several years ahead of this to go back to these fashions and to see Darren Star and company making the same mistakes that they made in the first season of Beverly Hills 90210, vis-a-vis making everyone wholesome and like, it's just a big group of friends. No one wants that shit. And you?
Well, I was definitely more of a 90210 person. I dipped in and out of this. Melrose Place was the show that my sister and my mother watched together, which is cute and probably unwholesome because my sister is like 7 years younger than me. Like, they started watching before she was in high school, probably. I was aware of some of the big plot arcs and like, you know, we did on Extra Hot Grade, our sister podcast, Jessica and or Heather, I forget which of them did it, from the Fug Girls, submitted the Kimberly rips off her wig episode for the canon, which obviously got in.
Of course.
And I remember watching that at the time, but I was not, I definitely was not a religious viewer of it when it was airing, and I never came back to it either. So I'm sure that I watched this episode that we're about to talk about when it aired, but I did not remember anything about it. And I also know just from like being, you know, a TV critic adjacent that, you know, this is, as you alluded to, this first season was definitely the year that they tried some shit and then took a while to figure out, oh, right, we're a soap, so let's get Heather Locklear in here and make it interesting. But I gather it's a while before we get to her, even though she is on the box of the DVDs, so that's promising for season one. Huh. So it won't be too long, I hope.
So there's 7 seasons. When can you guys predict we'll start the Models, Inc.?
Oh, I think I want to say season 3.
Yeah.
Okay. With Carrie Ann Moss, right? She was in it.
It's funny that it only lasted 7 seasons because that means it and 90210 ended like at the same time because Melrose Place premiered between season 2 and season 3.
Right. But there's 220 episodes.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So,
well, you better get started, guys.
Yep.
Okay. Yes.
Here
indeed.
We go.
So let's start with our C plot. This is kind of a catch-all for all the characters that don't really get to do anything this week. Gay Matt is gay. Rhonda is his best gal pal, and Jane and Michael are happily married! Exclamation mark. Speaking of wholesomeness and not knowing what characters are yet. This clip is not really about Matt, but since it's basically the first thing that we hear in the episode, it's Los Angeles, and it's the early mid-90s clip two.
Good morning, Los Angeles. It's 7:30 a.m. in the City of Angels, and the temperature today is expected in the low to mid-80s. At the present time, it's 72 degrees under sunny skies with air quality in the unhealthful range.
This is how a weather report has never been delivered. Like, today's high? Mid-80s? Like, this is not how people talk. Really?
That said,
no one has a car radio?
I remember going to L.A., one of the first times I was in LA, and it did rain, and the rain had like black specks in it from all the shit in the air. So,
well, yeah, that was the 90s. That was later than this, I assume. Would have been.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, that was before Priuses and various other environmental initiatives that have changed Los Angeles for the better. Anyway, Rhonda is gay Matt's best friend, and she gives us a lot of data when she blows by early in the episode, clip three.
Listen, girl, I'm running. I'm teaching cardio funk in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, cardio funk.
Oh, the reign of terror of butt floss continues.
Oh, God, yeah, you'll see. Thank you. Yeah, you'll see the butt floss in the visual aids. On to Jane and Michael, who are also in the Billy and Allison plotline, but we'll get to them in the B plot. She wakes Michael up sexfully. There is toe sucking. It's not okay.
So that's the visual aids too. About that, like, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, Michael is a doctor, and he works such crazy hours that he's not sufficiently horny for her anymore. Oh no. Moving on. Rhonda tries to get Matt out to a movie Saturday night, but he's taking kids from the shelter bowling to teach them how to have fun without drugs. Rhonda's cardio funk studio is 100% the one where Brenda meets that guy who picks her up in season three of Beverly Hills 90210. That has not happened yet in this timeline, but yes, that is yet to come in this year. So Rhonda busts a guy for very obviously checking out women's asses during her class. And as Sarah noted, it's kind of impossible not to. They are all wearing like leotards with thongs over them. Why?
Yeah, I don't know.
Mistakes were made. His name is Daniel. He flirts with her over a sweaty towel, but she eventually does agree to date him. And Rhonda goes from there to Jane's store for an outfit she can wear and return, and also to bitch about being single so that Jane can be smug and married and offer generalities about how to find the right guy, which from this point in the history of the show is funny.
just wait. Like, Michael is not even the worst fit. There's someone who claws his way out of a grave. I'm so excited for that episode.
So then Jane prepares a sexy dinner, but Michael is too tired to enjoy it. She finally says she thinks they're in trouble, and he pleads work exhaustion, ending by saying that when things get rough, he thinks of her or whatever. On Rhonda's date, we learned she got into aerobics because she didn't make it as a ballerina. Her date butters her up with compliments about her class before trying to recruit her into his downline on a vitamin multi-level marketing scheme. The words Herbalife are not said, but very strongly implied, speaking of Los Angeles in the 1990s and probably now.
And when he realizes she's not going to go for it, he's like, so we don't want dessert, right? And she's like, yep. Nah. I was like, girl, get some flan. Why not?
Herbalife was like the building you knew you were kind of close to the airport now when you're driving to the airport.
Yeah. So then it is Michael's turn to prepare a romantic meal, this time breakfast in bed. But Jane intensely tells him how lonely she is. He knows, but he's trying. She cries that she wants their old life back. Like, are we supposed to think things were better for them when he was in med school? Because I doubt it. Nope. But she feels like she's getting in his way out here in Los Angeles, and he allays her fears with sex. And later, gay Matt fulfills his role by telling a sad Rhonda how great she is. She says she wishes the two of them could make it work, but they can't because he's gay. On to the B plot. Allison meets Billy. Oh, God. So Allison's roommate and her gorgeous cowboy boots, which you can see the visual aids, sneak out into the night, peel her Dymo name tag off the mailbox, get in a cab and fuck off. After hearing about the unhealthful air quality on the radio, Allison wakes up and calls for Nat and Natalie. It is this Nat's turn to make the coffee, but when Allison goes through the apartment looking for her, she finds her room basically empty, but with a random assortment of stuff that I guess she could not carry. Without putting on pants, Allison runs over to tell Gay Matt about it. He suggests that Nat was kidnapped, but Allison is sure no one would want her, and also doesn't credit his suggestion that she was abducted by aliens, which I guess was an X-Files reference, because that would have been contemporaneous on Fox at the time. Mm,
space aliens, he makes sure to say.
Right.
Hey, Dad.
Jake hasn't seen Natalie either, but this is also how we learn that he and Natalie have fucked at some point. Jane thinks Allison is there about the plumbing, which is how we know she or someone in her apartment is the building manager. I guess both of them collectively, since Michael's never there. Allison asks Michael to tell the building owner she can only pay half her rent this month, but he's like, no. Like,
why and did then he just tells her to bounce a check? I was like, there's the character beat we're looking for. Yeah. Hello, Michael.
Yeah, he's not interested in her expository sob story about the job that she just started that won't pay her for a couple of weeks, and further snits, also expositorily, that she would learn what real human suffering is if she joined him for a shift at LA County Emergency. Got it. She realizes he's right, and now she has to find a roommate. Rhonda saw Natalie seek out. Allison's annoyed that Rhonda didn't do anything, and Rhonda advises that Allison put an ad in the paper because it's the past.
Oh, my God, yes.
And then Allison writes her ad while driving. Like, granted, she's crawling through traffic on what looks like Avenue of the Stars, but still, no. And then at the garage at her office, opens her car door into some rich asshole's fancy car. He recognizes her as the new receptionist. His name is Hal. He lets her kiss his ass before pointedly boring her about his divorce so that we all see where this is going. Mm. Allison doesn't.
No.
We also immediately know she's a shitty receptionist because the office is wide open with people waiting in the lobby and the phone ringing as she walks in. Like, no, no, you open the office when you're the receptionist. This is not how this works. So Allison's unloading her car that night when Billy rolls up in the stupidest outfit I have maybe ever seen. And you know how many episodes of 90210 I've seen. This is obviously in the visual aids.
Literally, it has to have been borrowed from the David rack.
Oh, God. Yeah. Except even David wouldn't wear something this uncool. It is, it's like a hooded, I want to say gray and burgundy striped like hoodie with the sleeves cut off.
Yeah.
Nothing underneath that we can see. And like the pleatedest chinos that ever pleated.
Yeah. And I'm assuming Samba classics because that's what he always had on.
Oh, God.
His soccer.
Arf. He knows Natalie. She told him she was moving, which is how he knows that Allison has a room for rent now, and he needs to move out of his parents' house. And as he babbles, we learn he's 22. His biggest monthly expense is his car insurance, and he couldn't date and still live at home. And also Natalie told him all kinds of embarrassing trivia about Allison. Like, Natalie, why did you leave? We love you. Allison sputters that she's never going to live with Billy, and he is fine with that in clip four.
Fine, fine. Probably wouldn't have worked out anyway. You're uptight, you're high strung, over judgmental. My God, I'd be like living with my mother.
Leave it to the professionals.
Honestly, she is still pissy, but just in case she changes her mind, he leaves his number. Yeah, well, don't count on it, is what she says, because she doesn't know she's in a TV show. Cue the montage of bad would-be roommates at Allison's door. There is a punk with a mohawk who is smoking, a ditz who tells Allison about her dream, Pat Mitchell, clip five.
I'm sorry, I'm kind of looking for another female.
Well, I will be next month.
Mm-mm, no, not okay.
Not okay.
No.
92, bad 92, bad.
Then there's some old bag. And then Michael shows up with an eviction notice. That was fast. This is when he tells her to write a bad check, since by the time it bounces, she will have found a roommate. Terrible advice. But again,
what are you, Matt?
Yeah. Allison doesn't want to break the law, but Jane and Michael don't want to see her leave, and Allison promises she will find someone tomorrow, but she ends up at Shooter's looking for Billy to offer to give him a shot. He pretends he already found another place in order to gauge her response, and she's disgusted, but then he says he'll move in the next day. And she also says she'll take the morning off. Like, you're going to be living together. What do you need to be there to monitor him moving in his bed from his parents' house? Like, you don't need to take off half a day. Go work. You're broke.
Yeah.
So the next day, Allison drops off her and Billy's rent checks and saves her apartment. And then there's an awkward moment when she walks in on him shirtless. This leads her to try to set up ground rules. She seems shocked by the idea that a single adult man might bring ladies home to his apartment, even though this is exactly why he said he needed to move out of his parents' house.
Yeah. Also, he has his own room.
Also, he has his own room.
Like, just tell him not to fuck on the futon that's in the common room.
Exactly. But somehow they both agree to evening companions no more than one night a week. What?
Okay. At the Melrose Ladies Hotel.
Honestly.
The fuck?
She has also labeled all her food in the fridge, including peanut butter, which you do not refrigerate. I'm sorry. I don't know why people on TV do this. It's gross. How would you possibly spread it? Let's talk about this for 500 years because this episode is kind of boring. Billy then picks a fight about who should pay more for utilities if he showers instead of taking baths, claiming that showers use less hot water than baths, which is absolutely not true. And of course,
also,
the most important rule. Yes.
Hot water is included.
Like, right.
90%. Maybe that's not how they do it in LA.
No, I think so.
Here, it's almost always included. So.
Right. Of course, the most important rule is that he leave the toilet seat down. This is very typical man-woman stuff, Very wrote. Then Allison later watches Billy dance salsa alone very badly, which I have extensively gift because it's that bad. Mm. He is embarrassed. And then
he looks like one of those marionettes that's on a wooden paddle. It's really bad.
Yeah, he does.
Like, what is wrong with your hip adductors? Something has gone terribly awry.
Oh my god, sweet limber legs. And then we learn he has career ambitions in clip 6.
Writer? What kind of writer?
A novelist?
You mean like Jackie Collins?
No, I mean like Norman Mailer. Oh, you don't know who he is, do you?
Of course I know who he is. I graduated the top of my class at the University of Wisconsin. Have you sold anything?
So what'd you say you do anyway?
Oh, I work at D&D Advertising.
Yeah? Well, what exactly do you do at D&D Advertising?
Basically, I assist executives. And I serve as a conduit of information.
And you answer the telephones?
Basically, yes.
So, you took your honors degree and you parlayed into a glorified receptionist job. You're a dreamer.
I'm not a dreamer. I'm doing it.
Whatever you say. But did it ever occur to you that maybe they just hired you because they liked the idea of a cute girl taking their messages?
My group of friends and I literally use this conduit of information line all the time for years. Like, we all had the same sort of like assy receptionist job in some form of publishing after we graduated from college. And when we were calling each other and the number that we knew was like, oh, that's Helen, the conduit of information at Knopf. Sarah Bunting, conduit of information, Scientific American. Oh, God. The mid-90s were a really rough time.
I was also a conduit information at Saturday Night Magazine, which has since died. I also love how both of them are like trying to get out of this conversation. Like, you're both losers. Like, it's fine. You're in your early 20s. This is how life is. But yeah.
Exactly. It's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. The next day, Allison's already bitching to Rhonda about all of Billy's guy-ness. And then Hal, the executive whose car Allison hit, gives her a questionnaire to fill out about Canyon Country Cooler as a Gen Xer. So That also places us in time when the Gen Xers are the young, fresh faces that advertisers want to pander to.
Mm-hmm.
Sigh. And when Allison comes home, Billy is embarrassingly dancing alone again. It turns out he is practicing because he's supporting himself as a writer by teaching dance at Arthur Murray. Allison rudely laughs in his face. And we also learn he apparently got the job by lying about his qualifications, as if a dance school would not have him audition. In Los Angeles, where dancers are like thick on the ground. Hello, there's already one in this building.
Yeah. What? Also, but, it's Arthur Murray. Like, that's the place where they paint the footprints on the floor, right? So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You really have no excuse not to just dance for them.
Uh-huh. Anyway, yeah. Billy wants her to practice with him. And then in the middle of the night, Michael has to come to Allison's to say that Billy's rent check bounced and he will need a cashier's check the next morning. Allison is horrified. Billy also is in a situation where he won't get paid until next week and figured he would have the funds before the owner cashed his check. So he took Michael's advice without knowing it. She lectures him about his finances and basically says he's a baby for being able to fall back on his parents. And if he doesn't come up with a rent, he is out. I only mention this because it's so stupid that I made a GIF. Allison is on her way out the door to the office when, like, both Jane and Jake are in the pool, like, just fucking around. And then it ends in a splash fight. Like, go to work. If she's going to work, it's a weekday. Get out of the pool. What is wrong with you? Anyway, then at work, Hal is a creep and Allison is oblivious in clip 7.
Canyon Country Coolers. The passion starts here. What do you think?
I love it.
Does it say early 20s?
Definitely.
See, the secret is the word passion. It implies commitment, but it also says sex.
It is amazing that you can communicate all that with one line. That's what I want to be able to do someday, you know?
You will. You will. Listen, the client's having a little party tonight to introduce a new flavor, and if you're not doing anything, maybe you could join me. It'd be an excellent opportunity to meet some people from the creative side.
I would love to. Can I just go home and change first?
Absolutely. I'll swing by and pick you up.
Great.
Oh, Allison.
I will also note, I'm not sure about this, but I think they learned pretty quickly that, I mean, we didn't call it this then. I think we called it the punchline rule. Mm-hmm. The movie punchline, which is like, if you're going to like make a property about stand-up comedy, about advertising, like, it's best to not refer to any of the product.
Oh yeah.
Lest it suck. And they Studio 60 sort of figured this out and still was bad. Don't at me, Joe Reed. I think they figured out that, like, Amanda Woodward, advertising genius, should never be heard, like,
pitching.
Yeah, pitching, because someone who can't find a pair of pantyhose to wear to the office is probably not going to be actually all that great at this. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, if Allison's like, I hope that's the kind of thing I hope to be able to do one day, like, suggest that a product is going to make people fuck. That's basically like the baseline of what you need to do as an advertising copywriter. How stupid are you?
Well, really. Also, it's booze. This shit does itself. Get some women in bikinis holding the product. You're done. It's just not that hard. Sorry,
it's really not.
Reaper.
No. So after the party, Hal openly hits on Allison as he's dropping her off, creepily leaning into her apartment. She nicely tries to put him off, and he shoves his way past her, asking for a tour and closing the door, and then pounces on her. She jumps away, still politely asking him to leave while he invades her personal space and laughs at her professional ambitions. And then, of course, she has to be rescued by Billy in his underwear, which no one is mad about, by the way, claiming to be her husband. Finally, Hal leaves, but not before threatening to get her fired. She blames herself for not having seen it coming a mile away, which, not to blame the victim, but honest to God.
Really?
Yeah, she and Billy flirtily discuss whether she owes him one. And I'll just say, getting back to his body, like, he's such a... Andrew Shue is a shoe of an actor. He's so terrible, like, and never gets better, as I recall. But he has a good body. He's not ugly.
Yeah.
He has a stupid face, for sure, but...
Yeah, and it's, like, he just always looks like, you know, he has mouth-breathing face.
Yeah, he does.
But yeah, this is the point. Like, there does come a point a few seasons in where all the guys who weren't Grant Chow kind of stop trying.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, we're not at that point yet.
So the next morning, Allison thanks Billy for helping her out with Hal and says he can stay, and he promises she can trust him, and she says she will try. So I guess that's their journey for the foreseeable future. Moving on to our A plot. Jake can't shake Kelly. Kelly drops Donna and David off at a burger stand on Melrose that is literally in the shape of a burger, promising to pick them up later because Jake lives around here and she wants to stalk him. I'm paraphrasing. Her friends are both sick of hearing about Jake and pretty sure if he wanted to see her, he would have returned one of her million messages, but Kelly's trying to hear that. So then Sandy, the Southern Belle, is out tanning when Kelly comes thirstily knocking on Jake's door. Sandy interrogates Kelly about how she knows Jake and forces her to admit that she is in high school. And that night, Sandy is barmaiding at Shooters and interrupts Jake macking on some broad to deliver a message. This is a long one, but there's, again, a lot of data in clip 8.
Before you start flirting with every woman in here, maybe you should just worry about the little high school girl. The one that's been hanging around the apartment just waiting for you to turn up.
What are you talking about?
Oh, I don't know. What's her name? Was it Kimberly? Katie?
Kelly.
Oh, that's it, Jake. How could you?
I didn't.
She's not even 18.
Sandy, listen to me. I didn't.
You know, Jake, I really do believe that you're a smart man. Somehow. I get that. But when it comes to women, you just don't think with your brain. I know that from firsthand experience, remember? You probably don't.
Of course I do.
First week after I moved out here... Oh, you're romancing me so hard it nearly turned me inside out. One week later, I heard so bad from being dumped on, my body nearly ached. You know, Jake, it would have been fine for the both of us if I never had to see you again. But I really do think that just slipped your mind that I lived right next door.
Well, whatever happened to love thy neighbor?
That's cute, Jake. See, I can joke about it now, because I'm over it. But that little girl I saw today, she wasn't joking. She's got some serious feelings for you. And sooner or later, she is going to catch you at home. And you are going to have to deal with the consequences of your actions.
Save it for your acting classes, Sandy.
Maybe change classes, though, because Jesus Christ. Wow.
I have so many notes just on this scene. Like, next doll.
Like, so bad.
This collection of accents her accent is just whizzing around like a bottle rocket trapped in a basement that is simultaneously in Mississippi, Kentucky, Texas, Massachusetts. Like, what South is this? Where are you? I know she's supposed to be from South Carolina. Nope. Also, yeah. She really sounds at some points like she's Roxette and is just reading phonetically, and like, you gotta wonder what take this was and how many times she'd fucked it up before, because just the cadence of it is like, please let me just get through all of this exposition and remember it this time. And oh my god, this is really bad. Wasn't she pretty good in School Ties?
Yeah, she was all right.
I mean, School Ties is not great. She was fine in it, right?
Yeah. Do you want to guess where she's actually from, Amy Locane? Or do you know? Do you possibly
I don't remember. I don't remember offhand. I will guess that she is from Virginia.
Trenton, New Jersey.
Well, it is South Jersey? It isn't. It's Central Jersey. Oh, yeah. Honey.
So, yes, she does about as good a Southern accent as we would imagine John Stewart could, who is also from Trenton, I believe.
My God, Trenton makes, the world takes. It's literally its motto. They refuse to change it. Crazy.
Anyway, Some other day, Kelly tries Jake again and actually finds him at home. He got her messages, but he's been busy working on a house. She recaps their last encounter at Jackie's wedding, which we all know about, and he has to tell her how shit is in clip 9.
Kelly, I was there as your date. I don't remember us planning our future together.
Don't tell me you didn't feel anything.
What do you want me to do? Spend my summer hanging out at the Beverly Hills Beach Club?
I don't know. But I just wish you'd stop avoiding me. It's making me crazy.
Hey!
Just leave me alone, okay?
Well, calm down, okay?
I was worried about you. I thought something had happened to you. How could you do this to me? You know how I feel about you.
I'm sorry. I guess I just don't know how to deal with it.
Look, if you think I am some stupid, lovesick teenager making a fool of myself, then why don't you just tell me, okay? And I will leave. But if you really feel something for me, and you're afraid of it because you think you're too old and I'm too young, well, I don't care what anybody thinks about us, Jake. And I don't know why you do either.
I do. Because it's a crime. Yeah. You're 17.
And he's written so strangely in this sequence. Like,
yeah.
That first he's sort of like, whatever. And then he's like, sort of aggressive with her, like grabbing yeah. her arm to stop her. Like, which is it?
Right.
Like, just tell her to she's too young and to fuck off and call you when she's 18.
Right. It's like they had to sort of continue from the 90210 plot line. Like, no, Kelly's not an idiot for thinking something is going to come of this. He really does care about her, even though we've just seen him hitting on another woman and like all of these references to like the many pussies he has slain. Basically, like
yeah.
Jake is yeah. a whore. You know, that's the only character note you need to give, except that she's a character from another show and you have to validate, you know, that storyline by making it seem like there's more to this than like, well, she was around, so he made out with her.
Well, right. But then, you know, like be consistent intra scene.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, it's fine.
Yes.
If it like we all understand what's happening here. It's a spinoff mm-hmm. and he needs mm-hmm. to be spun off and they haven't right. like, you know, opened the couplings yet. Sorry, bad phrasing. But
mm-hmm.
like, OK, but like within the scene.
Yeah.
Have him totally. Be like, I'm conflicted, instead of like, I don't care. 2 seconds later, where are you going? Like,
right.
Ugh.
Anyway, so he basically says, you know, it's illegal for them to do anything, saying that he's trying to do what's right. But she thinks he needs to acknowledge how he feels and quit lying to himself, and continues in clip 10.
Yeah, well, sometimes you gotta lie to yourself once in a while just to keep life running smoothly.
I see. Just go home, okay? I won't bother you anymore.
Kelly. I hate moral dilemmas.
What's the problem, Jake? Don't you think I'm pretty?
No, the problem is that I think you're beautiful.
Jake, you were out. She was leaving. What is yeah. wrong with you?
Also, I don't know. You could have anyone you want. Try someone with a normal size mouth. Just saying.
But then Jake, the idiot, asks Kelly out for dinner the next night. She breathlessly asks if he's going to blow her off, but he says he doesn't think either of them is going to get off that easy. And they aggressively make out, which I have gift. He seems like he may have taken some lessons since he was making out with her on 90210 when he infamously, like, got her nose in his mouth. Anyway.
Well, you know, she'll soon be used to that, you know, dating Brandon.
God. So then Kelly the next day brings Donna back to the hamburger stand to scheme in clip 11.
I just don't understand how you can go out with Jake after the way he treated you. Donna, yours is not to understand. Yours is simply to lie to my mother about where I am tonight.
One of the few genuinely teen moments in mm-hmm. either show, and it's on the one that's not about the teens. Go
figure. True. Also, all of these visits to the non-Peach Pit hamburger stand is just underlining that they do know there's at least one other restaurant they could be going when they're
it's
always running
like
into
a,
each
it's
other.
It's like a big fiberglass hamburger.
Yeah.
I love it. It's like being in a mini golf hole. I love
it. Totally is. Yep. So Donna will do it, but she doesn't think that Jake is right for Kelly. There's just something about Jake that Kelly can't let go of, she says. And Donna admits she's never been thrilled by a guy down to her toes, so she has to stop arguing with Kelly's horniness because she just does not understand it. And then it turns out Jake has brought Kelly to the very romantic location known as Shooters. You can see this in the visual aids, but she is like this big date that she's been angling for like, we're given to understand, weeks. Because it's the early 90s, she shows up in like a black, you know, skin tight leotard thing, but underneath the most shapeless drop waist floral, nothing of a dress.
Like, I think we saw this exact outfit on Marianne in the pilot.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you're right. Yes. Yes. It also looks like one of the numbers that the bad girl shoplifts when she gets Brenda in trouble. In that
I think actually they're all the same thing. I'd have to go back and check.
It could be. Yeah. Anyway, you can see in the visual aid, Sandy guesses that they're going to have a beer and a chocolate milk before trying to warn Kelly off of Jake. And then they're like, okay, fine, a beer and a chocolate milk. And then Sandy's like, oh, we don't actually have chocolate milk, which is kind of funny. Anyway, when she has left, Kelly sees Steve, Donna, and David walk in. Jake is upset to find out that Kelly is lying to Jackie about where she is. As he should be, because Jackie could charge him. But anyway, Kelly drags Donna away to yell at her. But it turns out Donna is more adamant about Kelly not dating Jake than she had let on earlier. And Kelly tries, it's none of her business regarding Jackie, but it is. Sorry, it's none of Donna's business, but it is, since Kelly has roped Donna and David into her lies. And meanwhile, Steve and David try to brief Jake on Kelly in clip 12.
Jake, one thing you should know if you start dating Kelly, her friends are never far behind.
And there's a lot more where we come from.
Look, I see what you guys are trying to do. Don't you think Kelly can make her own decisions?
Jake, I have just decided if you're going to date high school girls, I'm going to date high school boys. Starting with this one. You're cute.
No, wrong. This just reminded me of the summer I was 19. I dated a 40-year-old, and on our first date, the Donna and David Brigade, my friends Martin and Sue, totally showed up in this completely otherwise empty bakery where I met the guy, and were super obvious. And just watching this reminded me of that and made me laugh.
What happened with that guy?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought you say, and I married him.
No. No, this was like the first, last, and only time that my dad agreed to like pretend I wasn't there on the phone when I was standing right nearby. And he was like really sort of getting a kick out of it. Because he didn't have any sisters, and I don't know, I guess he enjoyed this drama. And then he hung up and he's like, you can never trust a man with two first names. Remember that. Mm-hmm.
And then you always have
doing whatever he was doing. And yeah.
So
little Dave Senior history for you there, since this episode is real boring.
Yeah. There's also some chatter about, you know, Sandy is an actress and Steve's mother was on the Hartley House, blah, blah, blah. Eventually Jake has enough. And when Kelly stomps back to him, he suggests that they depart. But outside, as Kelly babbles apologies, Jake says he thinks she should go home with her friends because they're right. She belongs with them, not with him. And they have it out in our final clip.
What about everything we talked about?
Come on, Kelly. I've got a world of experience on you. I've got a lot of age on you.
Kelly, I have problems that you don't even know about.
I think your friends are smarter than we are.
And maybe they're not. You know, Dylan was right about one thing. He said you had a great heart, but you didn't know how to open it up. Maybe you think I'm just a kid, Jake, but I thought maybe I could help you with that.
Yeah, I had to leave the music cue in as Jake bitterly gets on his motorcycle and motorcycles off. It's very dumb. So then Kelly tries one more time late at night to get Jake to fuck her. He will not even let her inside his apartment unless she can actually make him do it. So he paces over by the pool to say he's more worried about where his next job is coming from than he is about her. he doesn't just get a summer off to hang out at the beach club because he's not in high school. He's a teenager. It's 20-something with real 20-something problems because this is a different show, blah, blah, blah. But he promises that he will call when he gets his shit sorted out, and she claims to understand, which she doesn't. And he still does not definitively tell her to get lost, stroking her arms and asking what she even sees in him until she finally is like, okay, bye. Like, it's weird. And also, in terms of, like, the Jackie of it all, like, at this point in the timeline, Jackie is enormously pregnant, so assumedly is, like, at home all the time. Like, why is she not noticing that Kelly is sneaking out? But anyway.
Yeah.
In our final scene, the whole gang is gathered at the pool while Jake takes a break from worrying about his where his next job is going to come from to pull Sandy in and challenge gay Matt and Rhonda to a chicken fight that lasts for 500 years. That's our episode.
This was originally scored, not for nothing, by the other Vanessa Williams's Get Free, which was the B-side of Save the Best for Last.
Interesting.
Music trivia.
And that's our episode. Let us name our MVP.
Natalie.
That's a good choice. She Great does set boots. Off a lot of plot.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Rhonda because she looks great in all of her exercise wear. Cardio Funk was very hot. Apparently she is famous for doing it, according to Daniel. And despite probably being quite broke, as we find out, you know, she's borrowing an outfit from Jane's store instead of buying it and plans to return it for credit later. She does not get sucked in on an MLM, which is probably not something that a lot of aspiring artists at that time could say.
Mm. She should have gotten free dessert off Daniel, though.
Word. Least valuable player. Oh, boy. Kelly, get some self-respect. My God.
Seriously. I'm going to say wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're recycling that shapeless rust colored print schmata from like two seasons ago in a new show. And because of the Billy, it's like the Baja top mated with an away jersey from the Virginia Tech Hokies. It's bad. It's real bad.
And that's it.
All right. Next time on Again With This, Steve is a helicopter dad. Noah is a liar. Dylan is causing relationship problems. Again, some more. And Gina, correctly in our view, is grossed out to be Donna's sister. You'll be grossed out by the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This, which you can find on our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. You can see some of those visual aids and follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And if you're having technical or other problems or just want to object to how many pairs of paper bag waisted jeans are in the visual aids, email us. That's hello@againwiththispodcast.com. I'm future Jackie Collins, Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Canyon Country Cooler Deck, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Unhealthful Air, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hey, before we leave, and not to break the flow, but we should say all the extra foofara that was at the end of Again With This, the challenges and stuff, were not dropped from Zeus's forehead fully formed. So if you guys have ideas, hit us up and, you know, we may incorporate them.
Indeed.
Good call, Dave. Thank you.